Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are synthesizing the findings from a recent incident response bulletin from December 2025.
Right. And we're focusing pretty heavily on forensic and cybersecurity developments.
Exactly. And while a lot of the key incidents we're looking at happened in the New Zealand and Australia region, the lessons here are absolutely global.
We really are. And I think if there's one thing you should take away from this, it's that modern cyber incidents.
Yeah.
They're not just technical glitches anymore.
Yeah.
They've completely morphed into these huge enterprise-wide crises. They're basically a live stress test of your leadership, your governance, everything.
It's way beyond just the server going down.
Oh, miles beyond.
Okay, so let's unpack that. We're going to dive into the frankly alarming costs tied to state-linked attacks, and then look at why supply chain risk is causing so much chaos everywhere, from defense to finance.
And then we'll get into the practical stuff, the non-negotiable steps you have to take to be genuinely ready for this.
Let's start with the severity of the threats, which seems to be escalating, especially in that ANZ region.
It really is.
I mean, we have to start with this warning from the Director General of ASAO, Mike Burgess.
Yeah, the Australian Security Intelligence Organization.
He called the threat landscape uncomfortably fragile. That's a pretty strong choice of words.
It is, and he blamed it on aggressive, even reckless operations by state-linked actors. So this is not your standard cybercrime.
And that fragility has a price tag, right? A very specific one.
A huge one. The new cost modeling is, well, it's eye-watering. They calculated that a single act of cyber sabotage on critical infrastructure.
So things like telecoms, the power grid.
Exactly. Power, finance, water. One of those incidents could cost the Australian economy about $1.1 billion.
Wow.
Yeah. So a cyber risk isn't just an IT budget line item anymore. It's a national security issue that the board has to be thinking about.
And we saw that threat become very, very real for the defense sector. The NZ Defense Force, the NZDF, had to start a pretty sensitive assessment.
They did. They were trying to figure out if their data had been exposed after an attack on an Australian tech firm called Dialog.
Which is a subsidiary of a Singapore company, NCS.
Right. And this is the key part. Dialog provides IT services to both the Australian and New Zealand Defense Forces.
So the supply chain is completely interconnected.
It's the perfect example of that third-party vulnerability. An attacker hits one vendor, and suddenly they have a potential foothold in the military operations of two allied nations.
That just screams for zero trust principles, doesn't it?
It's the only way forward. You just cannot implicitly trust anyone on your network anymore, vendor or otherwise.
To New Zealand's credit, it seems like they responded pretty directly.
They did, with investment. The government announced about $53 million to go straight into strengthening NZDF cyber capabilities.
And that's part of a much bigger plan, right?
Yep. It's a slice of the $12 billion defense capability plan that runs through 2029. The goal is simple. Get more cyber specialists and get better at detecting and responding to threats in the field.
And if we pull the lens back, this third-party risk isn't just a defense problem. It's everywhere.
It's universal. Look at the U.S. financial sector. You had major banks, JP Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley.
All the big names.
All of them warned that client data might have been exposed. And why? An attack on their vendor. A New York company called CitizAMC.
It almost doesn't matter what the vendor does. It's about the access they have.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah.
Deep network access is the crown jewel.
And it's not just finance. Even the U.S. government got hit.
Yeah, the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO.
That's the nonpartisan agency that does all the economic forecasting for Congress.
Right. And a suspected foreign actor breached them in early November. The real concern there was exposed emails with Senate offices.
Which is a gold mine for creating targeted phishing attacks.
A total gold mine. An email that looks like it's legitimately from the CBO, people are going to click that.
So the theme here is pretty clear. Sophisticated external threats are using our own trusted partnerships against us.
That's the vector.
But maybe the most shocking part of this bulletin is, it's not the attack. It's what happens inside the organization after the attack. It's the delay.
The delay is staggering. I mean, the data that came out of those Freedom of Information requests in Australia.
For the mining and manufacturing sectors.
Yes. Just shows this systemic failure. Breaches were sitting undetected for months, sometimes over a year.
And there was one example that was just beyond belief.
The big one. One operator took 520 days to detect an intrusion.
520 days.
And then, as if that wasn't bad enough, it took them another 84 days just to notify the authorities.
What can an attacker do with 520 days of free reign on a network?
Anything they want. Ugh. That's not a smash and grab. That's moving in, decorating the place, and, you know, planning a hostile takeover. They can steal every credential, map every server, stage a massive ransomware attack. It's a catastrophe.
The reporting rules in Australia are pretty vague, something like as soon as practicable, but this feels like a failure of security operations, not regulation.
It's absolutely a failure of security operations. The vague rules just make it easier for organizations to drag their feet. But you're right. The root cause is a lack of visibility in threat hunting.
And speaking of failures, let's talk about the failure of trust within the industry itself.
Ah, yes. The insider threat. This one really shook people.
You're talking about the indictment of two former employees from cybersecurity firms.
Exactly. Kevin Tyler Martin and Ryan Clifford Goldberg. These weren't just random employees. They worked for the very firms that companies hire to help them respond to attacks.
And they allegedly used that knowledge to become the attackers.
That's the allegation. Using the ALPHV Black Cat ransomware against other companies.
It creates a massive crisis of confidence. How can you trust the experts you're hiring to defend you?
You see the problem. They targeted five U.S. companies, demanded $10 million from one of them. They got away with about $1.27 million in crypto. It just... It erodes the foundation of trust the entire industry is built on.
Okay, so on a related note of accountability, there was a big update in the SolarWinds case.
A very big one. The SEC dropped its remaining civil claims against the company and its CISO, Timothy Brown.
And SolarWinds basically called it a vindication.
They did. For CISOs everywhere, this is... It's a huge deal. There's been this immense pressure, this tension between reporting a breach quickly, which you have to do, and being so transparent you expose yourself to personal legal liability.
So this might ease that a little, encourage faster reporting.
It might. It could take some of that personal legal threat off the table. But the pressure to be truthful and accurate when you do report, that's not going anywhere.
So some movement on the regulatory front, but the attacks themselves aren't slowing down at all.
Not even a little. Yeah. Just as we're talking about this, there was another alert. A new wave of supply chain attacks hitting the NPM ecosystem.
So the software development pipeline is still a huge target.
Always. It's a constant battle.
The common thread through all of this, state actors, insiders, supply chains, it seems to be the failure to just see what's happening, to spot the threat that's already inside.
That's what it boils down to. The NCSC's cyber threat report put it perfectly. The severity of an attack is determined by the quality of your preparation and response, not just how fancy the attack was.
Okay, so let's pivot to the solution. The bulletin lays out three non-negotiable elements for being truly ready. What's the first one?
The first one is so basic, but it's amazing how often it's missed. Publish a plan immediately. Have a formal documented incident response plan.
Because without one, in the middle of a crisis, it's just chaos.
Total chaos. No one knows who's in charge, who makes the call, what the responsibilities are, that hesitation, that confusion.
Yeah.
It costs you time, money, and data.
And the plan needs to be clear on who has authority, how things escalate to the C-suite, and how you meet your legal notification duties.
All of that. So what's number two?
Ensure it is current and fit for purpose.
Yes. An old plan is worse than no plan at all. It gives you this false sense of security.
So it has to reflect how your business actually works today.
Right. Your use of cloud services, your managed service providers, your current leadership structure. If your plan has contact details for a CEO who left 6 months ago, it's not going to be very helpful.
Or if it assumes you can recover from a data center that you don't even use anymore.
Exactly. It has to be grounded in reality.
Which brings us to the third step. This feels like the one that separates the talkers from the doers.
It absolutely is. Test the plan at least annually. An untested plan is just a theory, a document on a shelf.
And you do that with tabletop exercises, scenarios.
Structured tabletop exercises are essential. Run through a nasty ransomware scenario. See how the team actually performs under pressure. It is the only way to know if your plan actually works.
And what does that testing show you that just reading the plan doesn't?
It reveals all the human elements. The document tells you the process, but the exercise shows you who gets confused, where the communication breaks down. You find unclear responsibilities, totally unrealistic ideas about how fast you can recover data.
Or you find out the one person you need is the person whose machine was compromised first.
It happens all the time. Finding those weaknesses before a real incident is probably the single most valuable thing you can do to reduce the damage.
And it seems like the pressure to do this isn't just internal anymore.
Not at all. Stakeholders are demanding it. Boards, Insurers, regulators, they don't want you to just say you're prepared. They want you to prove it.
You have to demonstrate readiness.
You have to demonstrate it with objective evidence. Your plan has to be credible and it has to be tested.
Speaking of good governance, we should also just quickly mention that new digital platform in New Zealand.
Oh, right. The one led by MATTR and managed by the Department of Internal Affairs.
Yeah, the goal is to streamline issuing secure digital credentials. It's about making it safer and faster to share personal information, which sort of bakes trust into the system from the start, a good forward-looking step.
Yeah.
So let's tie this all together for you. We've seen a landscape where cyber risks have escalated into these billion-dollar threats driven by geopolitical actors,
right,
made worse by these huge supply chain failures.
But the bulletin is really clear. The biggest vulnerability isn't always the attack itself. It's the internal failure, the slow detection, and the reliance on plans that have never actually been tested.
So managing a serious incident, whether it's ransomware or a third-party breach, really depends on making preparedness a core discipline.
Exactly. It has to be embedded into your corporate governance. Planning, testing, and reviewing. It's a cycle, and it has to be continuous to protect your operations and maintain trust.
Okay, so here's the final thought we want to leave you with. It's a real tension for leaders. On one hand, you have the SolarWinds outcome, where the SEC dropped the case against the CISO personally.
Which reduces some of that legal fear.
Right. But on the other hand, you have regulators and insurers demanding more and more proof of readiness, more transparency. So how should leaders balance the need for that transparency during a breach against the instinct to protect themselves and their people from future legal fights?
If speed and honesty are everything in a good response, what is the true organizational cost of holding back information, even for a day?